We have an article now called The Stuffed Marrow, and it comes with grateful thanks from our colleagues at St Albans Talking News, and they've kindly allowed us to use it. So I hope you enjoy.
This is Margaret again with an extract from a book by Joan Bakewell entitled The View From Here, Life at 70. The message was left on the answer phone. Mum, could you let me have your recipe for stuffed marrow? Stuffed marrow? I hadn't cooked it in 20 years. And the person now making the request clearly cherished some Proustian memory of what it tasted like. I was touched that the recollection of a pretty humdrum dish should have lingered down the years, enough for her to want to offer it up to her own children. I went in search. Since I am such a hoarder, the recipe must be somewhere. Before cookery books were so numerous and inviting, I used to cut out recipes from glossy magazines. These yellowing cuttings, the lumps of glue now sticking through the all but translucent pages, are stowed away for safekeeping. Indeed, for occasions just such as this. Being asked once in 20 years for such a reference makes it all worthwhile. The hunt was on. In the event of the cutting coming from Vogue, where Robert Carrier once had a column, could the recipe be his? I decided to try it out myself. The taste came as a surprise. It was wholesome, nourishing, but almost bland, nothing that would see it survive in today's highly spiced, over-flavoured menus. No sprinkling of parmesan, no freshly ground black pepper, no dash of balsamic vinegar, no dash at all, in fact. It seems the evolution of food has taken us from plain and wholesome to the overcharged taste sensations that colour our takeaways and jazz up commercial ready meals. At the risk of sounding like Alan Bennett's curate, life is really a great big kitchen. God provides the ingredients and leaves it to us to make the meals. I began to wonder whether my recipe experience applied to other things. Are we in constant search of the ever more tasty, the pepping up of life? And where will it all end? My evidence, of course, is anecdotal. I am regularly treated to the sympathy of those who think life in the 1950s must have been so dull. No television, no clubs, no wine bars, no visits to Thailand. It wasn't dull at all at the time. We had choirs and jazz, youth hosteling, tennis clubs, amateur dramatics. There was plenty going on. I'm not sure we would have found binge drinking fun or clubbing in Ibiza, the last word. Such pursuits represent a plaintive search for the ever more outrageous, the further extremes of enjoyment. Then there's television. Early in my broadcasting life, an interview was just that, a long discourse between two people, at least one of whom was thought to be worth listening to. No longer. A television interview in current mode will be intercut with film clips, overlaid pictures, visual aids, all to avoid the charge of blandness, the stuffed marrow of programmes. Otherwise, it's no more than radio, goes the cry. But yes, it is. The human face expressing ideas, especially a good face and interesting ideas, is fascinating to watch. For evidence, see AJP Taylor, Jacob Bonosky, and in our own days, David Starkey and Simon Sharma. Films too are getting spicier. Now we have real rather than simulated sex, passed by the British Board of Film Classification. And I'm sure the pornography is seeking out ever weirder ways of exploiting the human body. The big question is, does this apply to war? Is there a human need for ever escalating levels of excitement? Would the world, without at least the prospect of conflict, be a duller place? If we had no invasions or tyrants, no disputed borders or lethal weapons, would we somehow get round to creating them, out of boredom with the stuffed marrow life? Does anyone seriously want to beat swords into ploughshares? Would we give up the risk and glamour of guns for the reliable absence of excitement that is the ploughman's lot? These are all questions that we can refer to the evolutionary psychologists, of course, but it would help to know the answer ourselves. Meanwhile, there are cookery classes in Northampton designed to teach widowers how to cook. In my generation, only women ever learnt and practised such skills, so men of my age have been left high and dry by the loss of their wives, unable to boil an egg, iron a tea towel, or grill a steak. It's a fine initiative to keep them independent and resourceful. Nothing too spicy, I hope, for their mild appetites. Thankfully, the taste for excitement does die away. Perhaps they'd like my recipe for stuffed marrow.